man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
All right, welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I am your host today, Drea Clark. Joining me in this little bubbly booth are new and old buddies, starting with freelance writer whose work can be read in The Hollywood Reporter, Teen Vogue, The AV Club, and she's a producer for iHeartRadio, Joelle Monique. What is good?
That intro made me feel like a boxer coming into a ring, and I really appreciated it.
Nice.
There's a good energy to it. What's good? I rewatched Fighting with my family. Because I'm still obsessed with Florence Pugh.
Florence Pugh?
She is so cute. And that movie still warms my heart. If you were a fan of The Rock during his prime on WWE, he gives you so much throwback, just yelling and people's eyebrow. And it's just, what a lovely little movie that I never thought I would want, but like we'll probably watch again this week.
Good.
It's great.
It is. And she's a good person to have like a little obsession with.
Yeah, she hasn't let us down yet.
Have you watched the Vogue video where she eats a bunch of British food?
Yes, I did.
No.
I know exactly what you
drop everything,
must
go
watch.
Do it right.
Okay.
Now.
I've watched her like little Instagram videos where she's making marmalade and being a mess.
No, they like serve her.
And Paddington responded to her on Twitter.
Yes,
that was adorable.
He did.
Adorbs. Oh, when she made the marmalade. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The British one or the Vogue one is just them serving her like bangers and mash.
Bubble and squeak. And toad in the
She's
hole.
She's like, this is quite a good bubble and speak.
It's oh my
squeak.
God.
It's adorable.
So cute.
All right, on my other side, film reviews editor at The Wrap, Alonzo Duralde. What is good, my friend?
Oh, Drea, there's a song by The Association, a 60s band I really love. You know them for hits like Cherish and Windy and here, Along Comes Mary. This is an album cut. It's a song called Come On In, which I got in my head today. It periodically pops up because it has this great bass line. But then they're also like harmonizing the shit out of it because it's The Association. And I put it on for Dave, and you have to get up pretty early in the morning to stump the band on Dave White. Like, he knows music stuff like to an intense degree. He had never heard this song before, and by the end of it, he agreed with me that it's like an all-time banger. So come on in by The Association. Go to Spotify or YouTube or wherever you young people steal all your music now. Give it a listen. It will make your life better.
I definitely will. And I also love that you and Dave have the kind of relationship where you're still trying to stump each other with music. That's some early days stuff,
that
right?
That wasn't the intent. It just turned out that way.
Oh, that was a bonus.
That was a bonus.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Just a
even
sheer plus.
All right. And then extra special guest today, actor, writer, and producer who can be heard on the Maximum Fun podcast, Mission to Zix.
Yes.
Mujan Zulfagari.
You got it, yeah, hi.
What's good?
Oh, boy, Bodie McBoatface.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember him?
The classic.
Because now NASA is letting kids and teenagers name their new rover, but of course the names they have are super basic, like Prestige and Freedom or
totally.
Whatever. But it's all because they didn't want the mistake of Bodie McBoatface, which I think is the greatest name
also,
dude, in the world.
If we vote Bodie McBoatface, that's what we wanted.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wasn't that an English vote?
Yeah. It was. 2016, it was for like a research boat that they had.
Yeah.
And then the majority of the online world was like, yeah, Bodie McBoatface.
Yes. That's the kind of thing people
honor
get behind.
The votes.
Yeah. But then they rescinded. They took the name away and they gave it instead to like a smaller vessel
like a
within the boat.
Prestige or
it's called the David Attenborough boat or something now. But Bodie McBoatface is still there. And I just thinking about it today, and I couldn't stop laughing. I love that name.
That is good. That does make me laugh.
Yeah.
Rover McRover, I think, is what NASA should do.
I would do that. I would vote for that. Is someone going to ask me what's good?
Drea, what's good?
What's up? That's good.
I feel like
I'm so sorry.
You sensed how lame my what's good was.
No.
Like, you didn't. No, trust.
We were trying to put it off.
You did. You sensed it. And, like, I should have just, like, run with that silence. But it is a genuine. The joy this gave me, I spent almost 2 hours this weekend cleaning out my refrigerator and freezer.
Oh, no, that's a great
And by that, I mean, I removed, you guys, did I have 7 jars of pickles at different stages of being consumed? was every one of those jars expired?
Oh, no.
Yes.
Were they at least like, was one sweet and one was bread
Girl,
and butter?
Girl, they were all dill. Like, it was like every time I went shopping, I'm like, oh, I love dill pickles. I'm pretty sure I don't have any. And my thought was, oh, yeah, because they're expired. And then I was like, because you have to clean them out to recycle. Yeah. That's why it took so long, is I did the proper, I like cleaned everything. I took labels off. So, and it took me 3 trips to the dumpster to like get it all because the bags were so heavy. But honestly, I was grinning as I fell asleep. Like, I felt more accomplished than like had I argued a dissertation.
It's like, amazing. Oh.
And the next time you see pickles in the grocery store, you know you don't have any.
I know. I'm currently pickleless. Yes.
Does anything happen to pickles as they age? Like, do they look different in any way? Or?
Not at all. No, I know. I couldn't even do an interesting comparison.
Yeah, how does a pickle expire? I don't even know.
Oh, there's a date on a jar, and you're like, I don't want to die, and they've clearly raised me a warning.
I mean, when it says like 2014, I'm like, okay,
you win. Let us go.
You win, Clausens. All right. On today's show, we are going to be talking about The Invisible Man, which is neither wrestling themed nor funny. So I'm bringing a very weird energy already. We're going to take a call from the Who Shot line. And as ever, we will end with staff picks. But first, we're going to get into our new segment called It a Dick, which is short for Is This Important? And Do I Care? Each of us will read a news segment and answer that question. Is this important? Do I care? And a few weeks ago on this very show, we discussed French masterpiece Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Yep, yep.
My favorite film. Just this week, one of the stars and the director of that film made headlines again when during the César Awards, which is sort of the equivalent of the French Academy Awards, wanted criminal and child rapist Roman Polanski was awarded the best director for his new film, An Officer and a Spy. As soon as the award was announced, several female attendees walked out, including Portrait of a Lady on Fire star Adèle Haenel and director Céline Sciamma. As she exited, Haenel could be saying, yelling, shame, and sarcastically applauding, bravo, pedophilia, bravo. Is this important, team? Do I care?
It is so damn important. Make as like I'm pretty sure she's the only like female director in attendance who has like this new movie out that's like sweeping the nation currently. It's out, and like so for her to like take a stand and be like, yo, and then for her to come out afterwards and be like, when I was a child.
Oh, that's the star of it, not the director.
I'm
but
so sorry.
No.
And then she did make the statement that when she was a child, she was assaulted by a director on a set. Yes. So like the idea of it's disgusting. Like, it's disgusting that as an industry, we're just like, well, what can you do?
She actually, Adèle Haenel, the star, actually made a very public declaration earlier this year about being abused by a director when she was 12 and named him. And it was a very big thing. And it brought up a lot of, you can imagine the talking points that came with it and the movement behind it. So, yeah, it's been part of messaging that she's been bringing into the light for a while.
The French film industry has been kind of acting like the place that Me Too goes to die. Like in the last couple of years, as we've been having, I think, more productive conversations about this in the U.S., there seems to be a lot of, this is how we are. Can I back an adult woman? She's attractive. You know, like there's this weird pushback that I find just like creepy. And this, I think, is the fact that they gave him this award. Here's a bonus. I saw Polanski's movie at Venice last year. It sucks.
Didn't it win Venice too?
No. Well, I don't know. I don't think so. But it screened in competition. Because Venice was the We Don't Care festival last year. They screened the new Polanski and the new Nate Parker and like, you know, all this stuff. But yeah, it's not good. It's not a good movie. And I'm somebody who, as much as I find Polanski's activity, you know, off screen loathsome, like I will still defend his best work as his best work. This is not a good movie. And so for the Césars to give him that award in the face of competition like Portrait of a Lady on Fire and Les Misérables just feels like
it felt pointed.
It felt very pointed. Like, this is a statement we're going to make. This is the hill we're going to die on. Fuck all of that, you know. And I didn't know that Haenel and Sciamma were exes.
Oh yeah. They got together, I think, after Girlhood, and they lived together for years. And that was part of the big thing with Portrait of a Lady on Fire was they had already broken up before it started, and they still had this collaborative which I love.
Yeah. I'm also just sick of Roman Polanski. Like,
oh, right.
Why are we giving him anything at all? He can't go back to the U.S. because he legally can't.
Oh, he could, but he'd be arrested. He has an outstanding...
Right. He couldn't even go to France for the César Awards because he could get extradited.
No.
He didn't go.
That's one of the annoying things is he decided to boycott because there was going to be this big protest, and there were hundreds of protesters.
There were like riots in the street afterwards,
front,
right?
Yeah. And so he not only did he not go, he convinced his entire team not to go, which included people like actor Jean Dujardin. From the actor, right?
The artist.
So close.
The one shining possible glimmer of hope in this is that even before this all happened, but it will go into effect after the César Awards, obviously, but the entire board of directors for the César Awards said that they were going to collectively step down.
Good for you guys.
As a result for this. Like, they've been facing a lot of, and they should. I think it wasn't entirely male, but it was primarily male. Had faced a lot of controversy and were like, they had done the sort of first maneuvers of, oh, we're going to bring in some new. And then they were like, no, we're just going to all leave en masse.
It's still aggravating that it took him that long. Like 2 weeks before is when they all stepped down. But until then, they're like, yeah, this is cool. It'll be fun. It'll be great. Everyone loves him.
We're good.
So, as of this recording, there have been 3,000 confirmed deaths from the coronavirus. It is causing havoc all over the world and is now having an effect on the film industry. Mission Impossible 7 has halted production in Italy due to a recent outbreak. There are questions to whether the Cannes Film Festival will continue at all since the first diagnosed case has been found in the region. And the premieres for Mulan and the new James Bond film No Time to Die have been pushed back. In fact, the No Time to Die release has been pushed from April all the way to November. Is this important? Do you care?
It is one of those things. We were talking about the film Contagion, which is apparently like skyrocketing back up the rental charts. That's what they call them, the rental charts.
Yeah.
And there is something, that mix of, you want to take things the appropriate level of serious, right? Like,
yes.
I don't want to be willfully oblivious. You also don't want to become the like panicked person who's like buying things you don't need or just sort of like shutting
hoarding
your whole life.
Purell.
Exactly. Making things harder for people actually in the medical profession. So finding that is a tricky place. I understand why these bigger companies, but it's not just the pushing, it's seeing the small things. Like you mentioned Cannes, but we've also seen reports like today of South by Southwest. There's a bunch of
Apple pulled out,
Facebook, TikTok, and then there's some premieres that are starting to pull from it as well. I know the Beastie Boys documentary is pulling. So
that was part of the Apple package.
So it is that very real thing of like, oh, funny joke, and then this is real.
Oh, we can't gather anywhere.
This is a real
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think at first I was like, oh, well, that's fine, whatever. But seeing sort of the trickle down effect of, a lot of people who work in this industry don't make a lot of money. I don't know if you guys at home know. Reporters and stuff are not making the $1 million packages that artists are. We don't have, the big studio bucks behind. So a lot of like freelance artists for looking at like art conventions, which are also having a lot of con season, guys. And, we spend a lot of money on these tickets or booths to display your stuff and ordering, pins, enamels, whatever you're going to sell. So it's getting financially scary because it's already really hard for a lot of these freelancers. So on that level, I feel really bad. I know a lot of freelancers are like, I'm going to Austin anyway, and I'm just going to party if there's no festival. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think it'll be interesting kind of as a cultural touchstone moment of just how do we make good out of a really terrible sort of situation. Yeah,
I agree. It's I want someone to just give us the answer of like what the way we should be acting, but there isn't that person.
Yeah,
and so it's like a both short term and long term like sacrifice. Like short term, we should be not doing these things so none of us get coronavirus, but also it's gonna have huge economic repercussions for so many people in the industry. Like writers' rooms may stop. I'm a TV writer, and so pilot season might be affected. They may not. But we'll see. And theme parks, which is the most important thing.
Well, I think we have these moments
where
there are people who are like, oh, small government and da, 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 and then And then, you know, Katrina happens, yeah. And it's like, oh, wait, maybe we needed a larger government. And right. I think it's like, oh, yeah, so maybe if we had somebody who was actually running the show on this thing and sharing science and caring about the impact on humanity.
Maybe if we believed in science.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like we might be a little less terrified of everything right now. Yeah.
Speaking of terrified, in a recent video interview with director Rian Johnson, he broke down how he directed a scene in his most recent film, Knives Out. In the video, he also dropped a tidbit about the use of iPhones in movies. Let's listen.
Also, another funny thing. I don't know if I should say this or not. Not because it's like lascivious or something, but because it's going to screw me on the next mystery movie that I write. But forget it. I'll say it. It's very interesting. Apple, they let you use iPhones in movies. But, and this is very pivotal if you're ever watching a mystery movie, bad guys cannot have iPhones on camera. So, no! Every single filmmaker who has a bad guy in their movie that's supposed to be a secret wants to murder me right now.
Is this important? Do you care?
The butler has a jitterbug. He did it.
Oh my God. Jitterbug.
You killed Joelle. We hardly knew you.
Oh Lord.
I love this detail. I weirdly watched this video on YouTube before we even talked about talking. And I was like, I already knew that. I feel like Rian Johnson told me that. Huh. Oh no, that was a video. I did not have a conversation with Rian Johnson about that. I like the idea of that. And it also makes me remember from some of the films that I've made, there are very funny, especially the bigger you get with a corporation. I remember we had Coca-Cola product placement. Like, we weren't paid. At, like, a very indie level, your thing is like, hey, can we use your product? Mostly since A, then you can get it for free, and B, then you don't have to clear and license the logos. Yeah.
Right.
Which is more on, like, the indie level. You're not like, oh, yeah, Motorola rolled out my... No, man, I'm just like, please let us use the cell phone. So there was a whole thing, and I think it was with the Coca-Cola brand, but one of their like rules was you couldn't have children drinking. No, they could only be drinking like super small glasses of it. Like it was like a set amount. And also you couldn't have chubby children or overweight people drinking. There was something about the like soda that I was like, yes, you want it obviously connected with the health drink that it is.
Oh,
like,
yeah, God.
Definitely. That's the visual.
That's why we keep 26 grams of sugar in these cans. Yeah. Yes. Listen, this is so funny to me. Like the way that corporations try to play with our subconscious to be like, I've never seen a bad guy hold an iPhone. That must be the best product. Saintly. Everybody has an iPhone. I don't know how that would have impacted me as a viewer, anyone as a viewer, being like, that serial killer used an iPhone and now that's just serial killers use them.
Right.
The only one time that ever this kind of thing takes me out of a movie is when I'm watching a Sony movie and everybody's got a Vio.
Yes.
Like you don't have that's come on.
Or more Vios in this movie that are currently on the market. Take
exactly.
It down a notch, Sony. Come on.
Also, you're a lost Apple because villains are cool.
Villains are cool.
And now, they have Androids that work better, have better battery life, and they can get stuff done faster.
Yeah, right. Are they really wanting to hand that market over?
Yeah.
Nobody gets to smoke anymore. The only way to look cool in a movie is to have an iPhone.
Oh my God.
I worked on a kids TV show that Apple produced, and we couldn't use the word Apple in our show, even though it was a children's show, because you can't, they believe then you would be selling apples to children.
So even the fruit?
No fruit.
Wow.
They didn't exist in this children's world.
Weird.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So in some
Eve
worlds.
Eve gave Adam the persimmon.
All right. We are now going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about The Invisible Man just as soon as we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun.
Control, this is Rocket Ship 1. Come in, Mission Control.
This is Mission Control. Go ahead.
We have incoming, and it looks big.
Can you identify?
It looks like some sort of pledge drive. Affirmative. It's Max Fun Drive.
That's a verified Max Fun Drive. Countdown to Max Fun Drive is initiated. Can you project a time to intercept?
Based on the current trajectory, Max Fun Drive will be here from March 16 to March 27.
March 16 to March 27, roger. Rocket Ship 1, can you confirm a visual on common Max Fun Drive phenomena, such as the best episodes of the year, bonus content, and special gifts for new and upgrading monthly members?
We have a visual. Great episodes, bonus content, premium gifts confirmed, and more. It sure sounds quiet down there. Mission Control, what's your status?
All systems go, Rocket Ship One. Just catching up on our favorite Max Fun shows so we can tune into Max Fun Drive episodes between March 16 and March 27. Over and out.
Welcome back to Who Shall Ya? I am your host, Drea Clark, and in the studio with me are...
Alonzo Duralde.
Mujan Zafagari.
And Joelle Monique.
Today, we are talking about The Invisible Man. Joelle, would you mind providing us with the synopsis?
Yes, here we go. Okay, so Cecilia Cass is trying to get out of an abusive relationship. She spends the first, what feels like 20 minutes, but it's probably like 3 to 5, trying to get out of this house. Horrifying. She gets out, barely, with her sister's help. Dope. Then she gets to a hot cop's house. Now listen, that is an oxymoronic statement, but here we are. When you have Aldis Hodge playing a cop and he's in a tank top, it's wonderful. Then his daughter Storm Reed is also there, and they're like, listen, we're going to help you, like, get out of this house. We know it's been scary. So they help her get out of the house, and it's good, and she's, like, finally recovering, and then all of a sudden, things are going wrong in her life. Like, she has a job interview, and, like, her cool sketches aren't there, and she's people are like, oh, you're crazy, and she's like, definitely not. Put it there. I know I'm together with this. And then you find out that her husband was like an optics guy, and he created a crazy freaking suit that allows him to just disappear in the middle of like a room. It's crazy. He slaps a child. So she has to figure out how to get this guy down. And then she goes to a mental institution, and that is awful. And there's an ending, but I won't spoil it here.
That's the only thing you're not going to spoil, though.
you did leave out the part that he dies.
Yeah.
She finds out
that he's dead, and so she gets all this money, and she's ready to rebuild her life, and then things start going
awry. It's a mess.
Yeah. It's key. Yeah, I think it is important to bring that up because it's not just set up where we are introduced, and it's a horror film. Like the texture of all of this story, you could tell this story in so many different formats, and this is a horror film, and it is taking advantage of like the idea of dread on so many levels. And so one of the ways that it's key that not only she's escaped this man who is making it very hard for her to escape, then he does the thing where he like kills himself, and of course like with the implication like it's all your fault, that sort of that lingering abusiveness, and then she gets his money, but only if she is mentally competent in all of these
things.
And
it's controlled by his brother, who's like this spineless, awful lawyer, who's just like, what can I do? My brother set these things up this way. I hated him too, you know. It was awful for both of us equally. Get the F out of here. Ugh.
Yeah,
annoying.
Those guys are great. Great guys. So one of the things that this movie is doing, and we've seen a lot of horror movies take on so many rich and detailed emotional elements, and this
one... like to call those elevated horror films,
I'm sorry,
right?
That's what I meant.
No.
This is definitely what April Wolf would call an elevated horror.
April, the storm in here. No.
I just summoned her, like... a witch, she's going to fly
juice,
over here. Exactly.
Candyman.
And this one is taking on very seriously and like definitively the concept of both gaslighting within a relationship and the structure of abusive relationships, how we've seen played out a lot. Like a pretty conventional, like... what's it? Like a routine. This is what an abusive relationship looks like. How did you guys think it handled those? Because they're pretty sensitive topics in general.
On the one hand, the anxiety you feel watching that show it's very intense. I've helped two friends escape abusive relationships, and I've watched met one after she got out of an abusive relationship, and have watched her go through the steps of like healing afterwards. And so there are elements of it that are like really spot on, like this idea of when her sister is like, you know, I don't believe that what you're saying is happening to you has happened to you, like crushed heart, like it's so disheartening. Or the rush, people want you to be healthy and happy sooner than a lot of times you're ready when you're hurting, and a lot of that time goes, I just don't want to hear about it anymore, even though that's the process they have to go through in order to get out. The part that's missing for me is the fact that at one point she was in love with this person, and that's, I think, what makes escaping abusive relationships really hard, is not necessarily just the getting out part, which is daunting as hell. But it's the training yourself to understand this isn't love. And I think we sort of enter after that, and then there's never any sort of relapse. We know that, like, I think 7 out of 10 times women return back to their abusers, because it can be love can be addicting. And so by not touching any of those points, there seemed to be there was an emotional level that was missing for me. But the horror of it, the disbelief that her family has, the shortness people have with her after a while, all of that felt horrifyingly real and sad, and I resonated with me. Yeah.
I've full disclosure, just came from a marathon of Handmaid's Tale.
Oh,
previous
wow.
to this. So I was already in Elizabeth Moss
suffering.
Feeling that way. Mm-hmm. Suffering. I was like, oh no, she's still in Gilead. She'll never leave. But yeah, I really identify, or I just like really felt for the idea that no one would believe you. This mm-hmm. crazy idea that even the people closest to you that the Invisible Man is trying to get to not believe you mm-hmm. by making them turn against you. Like that really rang true to me. Like that moment where you just feel like you're the most alone person in the world and no one is hearing you, or you're seeing these things happening, but no one understands it.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think the best horror movies are always about something else, you know, in the way that mm-hmm. science fiction is a way to talk about what's happening right now, but couching it in a future, you know, that may or may not ever exist. I think the best horror movies use, you know, their bag of tricks to delve into things that are about the human condition. And yeah, this to me, I love the how they sort of equate the notion of gaslighting with the kind of classic Hitchcockian trope of no one will believe me, you know? And so you do have this guy who is essentially like estranging her from her support system, which is classic abusive behavior. And so they find a way to kind of dovetail the genre requirements with the story that's being told here and the specific mechanics of the abuse that's being depicted here. But it's a very effective horror movie. I mean, it's just you have all these moments where, like, she has to go in the attic.
Oh, yeah.
And you're just like, ah! You just know nothing is good is going to be in that attic, you know? And
yeah, I love, Joelle said that the opening sequence, which is probably 5 minutes, feels like 20.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, the sense of dread and tension is ratcheted up throughout. And there's several of those. And it's exacerbated by the very real reality-based concept of not being believed. Like a lot of horror films you see, you're like, oh, I'm scared.
Yeah.
I'm also not super worried that my house has this like Japanese haunting or whatever. In this, it's so scary because you watch it and you're like, this feels so real. I feel like I know there are women who are going through this. I know that they are not being believed in very similar ways. I didn't have problems with the sort of economics of the script kind of consolidating things to just move it along, because I felt like I could fill those in. Although I understand where Joelle is coming from with that.
There is a bit of dialogue where the brother says something along the lines of, like, you're the one woman who wasn't interested in his money,
right. mm-hmm.
and like who he felt like he had to, you know, sort of like placate, and that was why he had to then control her, because, you know, she was the only one who didn't want to be controlled, I guess.
They do a good job selling his obsession with her. The, like, it's the code, the day they meet is the code to something, and like I believe all of that, but just I feel like it only showed one side of the struggle, and maybe that's all that seemed to be the aim, and it's fine. Yeah. It works, but like knowing the sort of additional emotional struggle of trying to leave a relationship, it seems to have left a lot out of what that process is like for me. But as far as like a horror film, the way the suit was designed and built, all the eyes constantly watching and creeping and shuddering. It's cameras, but they're essentially eyes always watching you. I've talked about how I really like movies about obsession. I didn't like this movie about obsession. I liked the movie, but the whole time I was like, no, this creeps me out in a way that is not at all satisfactory.
Right.
But her journey, watching her sort of try to figure things out and put it together, and also just this level of resilience, because at first her fear, maybe 3/4 of the way through the movie, maybe a little less, like, she stops being afraid, and she's like, oh, no, now I'm on the hunt. And that flip is just, oh, gosh, it got me so amped.
I call that
like,
the Jennifer Lopez enough moment.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
But this like, is also... oh, you guys saw this, too? Okay, cool, I'm going all in.
But this is also a movie where, literally, it's about a man trying to control a woman's, mm-hmm. you know, uterus. Like, her pregnancy and his determination to, like, be in charge of that, like, is a major element.
It's also a big part of Elizabeth Moss's career, too.
Weird. Yeah, the double themes of this. Speaking of the suit, I know Alonzo and I are fans of the 1933 The Invisible Man.
Yes.
I have weirdly already mentioned Una O'Connor's house or like innkeeper woman on the show before because she's one of my favorite side characters in all of cinema. But one of the interesting, actually the suit that renders the man invisible in this is interesting for several things. Just the terminology of optics, mm-hmm. because it's that idea of like, oh, it's just how something's being seen. Therefore, you could be wrong with it. Mm-hmm. But in the original, the 1933 movie, probably more so than the book, which I'm less familiar with, there's an implication that the potion or whatever formula he's created has sort of led to this mental state. Whereas in this Invisible Man, there's no reprieve. It's, no, this guy is an abusive, obsessive jerk off.
And he has a suit that makes him
invisible.
And
it's just him. And now he's used that impulse to make a suit that makes him invisible. Yeah. But the other thing with the suit that I loved is it somehow took the bottom out of all of the other Invisible Man things were when he was full invisible, it meant he was naked. And this movie found a way to sidestep that because there's fully a scene in the 1933 one where he's like gets naked and like rah, like makes a crazy noise and runs, and then you find out in the back seat of a car just like free balling it on this man's Model T or whatever.
By the way, since you point out that the original, the 1933 version, which is based on the novel by H.G. Wells, H.G. Wells is not credited in this version. Our friend Bibbs pointed out when you reviewed it for me, which is fine because it's, I mean, apart from there's an invisible guy in this movie. Sure. There's really no resemblance.
And the
but
last
like,
name of the guy. Wasn't his last name also the main character, Invisible Man's character?
Was it Wells?
No. The name of the character is also the name. The last name is the same family name as the scientist.
Oh, I don't know. I have to look that up. I don't know.
Very interesting.
But yeah, Lee Whannell, who wrote and directed, just like there's no adapted by whatever credit, but I can see that.
I know that this is not part of the Universal Monster relaunch, but watching this got me thinking that, like, what if it was? I would like to see, as we're looking at horror movies and how they've evolved, especially over the last 3 years, especially if we're looking at Get Out onward, the idea of who is a monster and how that's sort of played and twisted. We're looking a lot at financial abuse, which we see a ton in this movie, the way his money allows him to move without consequence. I think it would be cool to see like the same thing if we did a mummy, but instead of like, oh, it's like the mummy, it's more about like stealing from other cultures and then profiting off of them. And then what is like, we could do a Frankenstein about like advanced science techniques and the idea that money can prolong your life, but maybe not. Now you're distancing yourself from your humanity.
From ethics,
I think there's a whole series of potential.
You
want to
get
in
into
here.
A woke universe.
I mean, imagine if they were like, Jordan Peele, do you want to just like continue doing
this?
Don't give
it all to him. He had nothing to do with this.
I know he didn't have anything to do with this specific film, but he's got the like space distance headspace to do it if he wanted to, and I would like to see it.
I will say this. I mean, Peele or not, I do think, you know, if you're going to reboot the Universal, you know, monsters, rather than try and jam them all into a shared dark universe, if you were to go just sort of title by title and individually figure out what's an interesting spin, what do these classic stories say about our contemporary version of science or about morality or whatever, do that and don't make them connected to each other.
Yeah, I agree. I'm happy. I'm really excited to see this movie versus, and I'm sorry if I offend people, a Johnny Depp version of this movie. Like, I don't want big stars.
You're in a safe space here.
Right.
Lady.
Yeah, take doing all these movies that are just, okay, same person
happening?
Being recycled.
Has that not been canceled?
I don't think so.
No.
I think
that
was like,
canceled.
No. There's no way they release that
but like,
movie now.
With Tom Cruise in The Mummy, they were like, this is the beginning of something amazing.
Yeah, they really
and
tried it.
It didn't happen, and I'm very happy for that. Yeah.
I would, however, like to have seen the Angelina Jolie Bride of Frankenstein that Bill Condon was going to direct.
Absolutely.
And Bill Condon is exactly the kind of artist that could take an interesting spin
Absolutely.
On the source material and then with, you know,
yes.
current cultural elements. By the way, Mujan was correct about the family name.
Who
did? Yeah, Griffin.
Griffin.
Yeah. Yes, from the original novel.
Let's see, yeah, same last name, different first name.
Different
though.
First
yeah.
name.
But, you know, even though this does fall into the, you know, a category of Elizabeth Moss character, she's great in this. She
love
is
her so
just
much.
Like blowing me away.
Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite films of last year was Her Smell, which I wish more people would see.
So
I think her performance in that was just, you know, just all-consuming in a great way. And in this one, you know, she, you know, you're right. She does that full thing of, like, she is, like, completely PTSD'd victim at the beginning of the movie, and at the end of the movie, she is taking no prisoners.
Yeah. Well, she had that panic attack, like, on the floor. I was like, I understand that. I feel that. For, like, yeah, she's amazing. Her face, she's willing to go there. She's willing to, like, really show very close-up shots in every single film she does of the human emotion. And
yeah.
she does it in new, interesting ways. There were... Seeing Handmaid's Tale 3 seasons in 3 days, I think
wow.
I'd know all of her faces because they're so close. And she goes through a lot of pain. Mm. But in this one, I was like, oh, that's a new one. Good for
I
you,
Elizabeth.
I haven't
seen that face yet.
You haven't seen that face?
That's a 6B.
Yeah.
She's a remarkable talent because she manages to be a very immersive actor. I don't see around the edges of her performance. But she's also sympathetic and accessible
yeah.
in a way that sometimes, like, actors are not. And especially in characters like this, actually, so many of the characters she play
yeah.
really require us to be not just on the side of the character, but willing to look further because we believe that character.
Mm.
She plays a lot of people who are not, like, believed or respected.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. So what a fun choice for her. I can't wait for her to, like, be the best friend in a rom-com.
I know. I just want to see her at the beach with no problems, just laughing for 90 minutes.
She has said that she wants to make a Hallmark Christmas movie.
Good.
And Hallmark
Shut
is like,
up.
Yeah, we want that, too.
No kidding.
So I am just like... Please.
Let her just have a pleasant day. Nothing terrible
I
happens.
Want to see her go to a small town and decorate some goddamn cookies and
yeah.
just
I will say,
relax.
And again, without giving away the ending, I do appreciate this movie puts you through the ringer, and it is one of the most satisfying
oh, yes.
endings.
Chef's kiss. Mm-hmm.
Like, because honestly, I don't think, and I made a joking comparison to Jennifer Lopez's Enough, which is, by the way, what I consider the full title. like, William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet.
Yes.
Jennifer Lopez is Enough, which I will watch anytime it's on television.
So
I refer to it as the Jennifer Lopez Krav Maga movie. But
oh, yes.
Same
okay.
difference.
She does jump a lot from wall to wall.
Yeah,
yes.
I'll also accept that. But that movie has a satisfying end. There's something about abusive relationship films
mm-hmm.
in general. Obviously, Sleeping with the Enemy, I think, is kind of...
I remember seeing the trailer for this thing, like, oh, this is Sleeping with the Enemy, but this is lot more... conversant in human emotion and, like, reality.
The, yeah.
That movie gives such a weirdly cinematic, question mark, version of spousal abuse with the Berlioz and the towels and the can labels and everything. It's almost like it's a little ridiculous, whereas this movie, it is chilling.
All right, so our final review of The Invisible Man and how we frame it is, you choose, would you screen it, would you stream it, or would you skip it? Alonzo, would you like to start us?
Oh, absolutely. Screen it. I mean, this is just a satisfying genre movie and I think a smart, you know, exploration of the issues that we've been talking about here. It checks all the boxes. Another great Elizabeth Moss performance. And yeah, I mean, it's stylish. Like, you know, they're not just doing the Blumhouse 2-location thing. Like, they actually, you know, they shoot things in an interesting way. It's you know, it's the same guy who shot Lee Whannell's previous film, Upgrade. Yeah, check it out on the big screen for sure.
All right.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, go to a theater with your friends, do it sooner than later, and screen it. It's, I think it was so much fun in a terrible way. fun may not be the word, but it was just a wonderful horror movie. I'm generally not a horror person.
Me neither.
I tend to not like them. But this one, I love Lizzie Moss, so I was there for her. And also, yes, visually, especially those like long, empty shots in the beginning. You know it's called The Invisible Man. You know he has to be in there. And they play with that. Like, all these early shots, you're
like,
where is he?
Why is everybody else on the right of the frame? Oh!
Yeah, right, where is he? He's got to be here.
Oh, they set up such a perfect motif where they, like, pan the camera very early on to let you know, like, oh, this is going to keep happening, and you are not going to know who's in the room. Oh, so good. Great horror film. Oh, It's fun to watch. Like, it's got that great suspense arc where you're like, I don't know what's happening. I would say if you are a survivor, sit close to an exit if you can and you need to take a break. I've talked to two of my friends who are survivors, and one of them has now seen it 4 times in theaters. She loves it. So if that's any kind of like encouragement for you to like see it, it doesn't end on a downer. I'll put it that way. So yes, go see it in a theater.
Yeah, I'm also a screen it for all of the reasons you guys said so well. It's just, it is fantastic and horrifying and, a good cinematic experience, as the kids say. Now, we will be right back after we hear from another show from Maximum Fun.
All right, Adam, Maximum Fun wants us to record like a promo to tell people that they should listen to The Greatest Generation. You want to do that?
No, I am tired of all the extra work. I just wanted to talk about Star Trek with my friend.
I think it would be good to like try and get some new listeners by appealing to the audiences of other shows. Like, this will only take a minute or two. It could be good for us.
We sit down for an hour every week and talk about a Star Trek episode and make a bunch of idiotic fart jokes about it. It's embarrassing. If it got out that we made this show, I think it would make us unemployable.
Adam, I have bad news for you. We have tens of thousands of listeners at MaximumFun.org.
Oh my God. I think I'm going to throw up.
The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. Every Monday on MaximumFun.org.
I'm really going to be sick.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I am still your host, Drea Clark. In the studio, still with me are
Joelle Monique,
Mujan Zulfikari,
Alonzo Duraldi.
Now it is time to answer a call from the Who Shot line. Casey, play that call.
Hi, Who Shot You panel. So back when it was just in Austin, the Alamo Drafthouse had something called Movie-oki, which was karaoke, only with movie scenes. You pick a famous film scene from a list, you get up on stage, and you voice, yell, beatbox, sing, or whatever over the subtitled footage. It was amazing, and my guess is that copyright issues is why they don't do it anymore. So anyway, I was wondering, if you were to go to Movie-oki with your best friend, what scene would you do?
What a great question.
It's such a good question.
It's so great, yeah. Oh my
God. I would love to do this. The big thing is, for so many, you'd need a scene partner.
Sure. Yeah.
Because there's not, like, there are obviously the monologues in the world, but those aren't always fun.
Right.
The first thing that comes to mind for me is something that I'm like, I might have to weigh in if Casey should remove this later. I, fun fact for me, can do all of the jive from Airplane.
Amazing.
And would quite enjoy doing that. And then I say that out loud and I'm like, ooh, maybe I shouldn't. Is that inappropriate?
It's my Iranian mom's favorite movie.
Airplane is? Oh my God.
I love that.
I figured if Barbara Billingsley could do it in the film, just a smidge, then maybe it would be okay for me.
I feel like as long as you're doing it with the movie and enjoying yourself in that capacity, then we're good.
There's also no swear words. There's definitely no end, like it's just jive. Yes.
Yeah, I think that could be good natured and fun.
Okay. Thank you, Joelle.
I was back home with my high school friends. Literally any scene from Moulin Rouge, but definitely the fairy pixie one where they do absinthe for the first time. We probably reenacted that. Like, we would have a lot of sleepovers and watch that movie a lot in high school. If it's my current friend group, they wouldn't do it with me. So I'd be up there doing like all of the Hairspray by myself. The John Travolta 2006 one, because it's my favorite. John Travolta being a lady just feels right to me. And I could do all of those scenes backwards and forwards. He's so bouncy and fun. Ugh, totally. Yeah.
I want to challenge myself as an actor.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Choose a scene that requires no partner at all. So I would choose the end of Call Me By Your Name of Timothée Chalamet just staring off.
Just crying? Off. Oh, my God! Wow. Oh, my God!
While Sufjan Stevens whispers into the sound drum.
Jesus. My heart. Oh, no.
Did any of you watch the other two? The Comedy Central, there was
yes.
It ended with one of them recreating that and then
scene.
The sister's in the background and it's framed the same and the sister's like, or the mom's like, what's he doing? Oh, he's doing the Call Me By Your Name thing.
Even Portrait of a Lady on Fire kind of ended like that too, with her just watching the
Those movies, you could definitely overlap them and they hit almost all the same beats. Yeah. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah, take like five movies with that and it has that ending and it'll just stand up there and just do the faces.
Yes.
Well, one of my favorite movies has some really rich monologues in it, and that would be All About Eve.
Yes!
So, you know, like Betty Davis gets a couple. Gary Merrill gets this one where he explains what theater is. That's very hammy and I think a lot of fun to do. You know, like I could, I would love to do the, you know, but I would need a partner. The climactic like argument of Two for the Road. You know, I brought that up again. The scene they have at the end where they, you know, kind of figure out what their lives are and where they're going to go, I think is great. I think, Joelle, you and I could do a really good the scene in Mahogany where Anthony Perkins is driving the car.
Yes. I love it. I was also just thinking, you mentioned monologues. I was like, I would love to do Angelina Jolie's when she's yelling at the girl who had chickens under her bed and Girl Interrupted.
Oh, Brittany Murphy.
I've never been mean. I don't think of myself as like a mean person at all. And the catharsis of just being like in someone's face and that kind of anger, that would be fun to just act out on stage where no one's actually getting hurt.
In a similar energy, I would love to do the entirety of Meryl Streep's performance in A Devil Wears Prada.
Oh, yes. Sure. Oh my gosh.
Obviously,
I do that in my bedroom just casually, so I don't know.
Yeah. Talking about Cerulean Blue. Does anybody work here?
I would want to do that, but for all of Gene Wilder's performance in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, nice!
You get
Wait,
nothing.
Stop, don't.
That is the most Toronto place. That's good.
And I'll just do Paul Giamatti in any movie.
Just Paul Giamatti. It would be fun if we were in an Alamo Draft House to do Regina Hall stuff from Scary Movie, where she's just like yelling at the screen and like fake recording things. I think that would be kind of cheeky and funny.
Eating fried chicken at Shakespeare in Love.
Listen, here for what a dream, honestly.
I would like to do a comedic rendering of Robin Williams' speech from Good Will Hunting.
It's Not Your Fault speech?
The word for word, It's Not Your Fault speech, but make it funny.
Oh my God.
Although that's not Movie-okey. Movie-okey, you're saying it like in front of it, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll still do that speech.
Yeah, sure, make it funny. Your scene partner would have to be so good. I'm trying to think of like how do I respond to your humor and be like, No, it is my fault. I don't know. We'd have fun with it.
We'll workshop it.
I love
it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you to everyone who's called in. These have been great. I'm always so impressed with the questions people have. They're so much better than questions I would think of. The number for the Who Shot line, if you have a good question, is WSY-803-1664. And as Alonzo likes to say,
keep it short.
Keep it short. I was going to say brief. Twist. All right. Now it is time for staff picks. It can be any movie, in theaters, streaming, what have you. I love that what have you is permanently in the script. So we say the phrase what have you every week. Mujan, please start us off.
You know, whenever someone asks me, what is your favorite movie? Or like, give me like your top 10 movies. Mm-hmm. I always have a brain fart and I'm like, what is a movie? I don't know what movie is. But the one I always forget, and I love this movie so much, and I just recently rewatched it on an actual human DVD, is the 2008 movie The Fall, which stars Lee Pace.
Yes.
And it's about a little immigrant girl who finds herself in a hospital recovering from a fall, and she meets a bedridden man who gives her this whimsical story, and we see it from the story from the mind of the kid, how she imagines it. And they actually, the kid's not an actor in the movie. They basically improvise with the real child non-actor. And you could tell, like, she looks at the camera. She, like, says, like, what am I doing? Like, it's just a delightful, lovely, beautiful film.
Gorgeous.
That not many, I feel like, my friends know about. So I'm putting it out there. One of my favorite movies is The Fall.
Tarsem,
your selection.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Up to you.
Tarsem Singh. Joelle.
Yes. This is a movie I saw at Fantasia Fest last year. It is now in theaters. I think you can also buy it on Amazon Prime. It's called Blood on Her Name. If you are into cover-up movies, but are always like, man, people are cold-blooded killers, and I feel like maybe there aren't that many actual cold-blooded killers on this earth, this is a movie for you. A woman accidentally kills a man. It happens in the first scene. I'm not giving anything away. And then she has to figure out how to cope with that, and it's not... She legitimately feels bad about it, guys. So, again, very early in the scene, she brings the body back to the guy's house with basically a note that says, I'm sorry. And then from there, she's like, crap, but I also don't want to go to jail. I'm a single mother. I have to take care of my kid. And it's like such a mess and so like, I feel like realistically relatable to like what happens if you actually kill a person and now you have no idea like how to process or deal with that. It is such a wild, interesting film. And I've read a couple of reviews where like, this is not how you commit a crime. I'm like, this woman's not trying to commit a crime. She accidentally did, and now she's trying to figure out her life. I love a hot mess on screen. She is totally a hot mess, but it's good and interesting and fun. So, yeah, watch Blood on Her Name.
It's a great title. Alonzo.
A movie that keeps coming up in various contexts. I find myself referring to it all the time. You know, you could even put it in the category of, hey, where there's a virus out, and if you're not going to watch Steven Soderbergh's Contagion, maybe you'll want to watch Todd Haynes' Safe, which is currently streaming on the Criterion Channel. Yeah, so Julianne Moore plays a woman in the 80s living in Los Angeles. She doesn't have a ton of personality, that she's sort of allowing it to be subsumed in her marriage. And she finds herself having violent reactions to everyday chemicals. She passes out at a dry cleaner's. She gets a new sofa that makes her nose bleed. And so she winds up having to sort of like separate herself from society and try and find like a clean way to live. And at the time it was, you know, a movie that I thought was equal parts like about how like, you know, there's more chemicals and more just shit in the world. And then also this sort of metaphorical exploration of a woman's alienation from the world around her and her life. And of course, then now last year, Todd Haynes made Dark Waters, which is about how we're all dying of Teflon. So I guess, you know, he just meant it that way all along, that, you know, fuck the alienation part. It's about how we're all being chemically murdered. So anyway, Safe, brilliant movie, great Julianne Moore performance. Check it out.
I'll back that up. My choice is a newer film called Saint Francis.
Oh,
there's
yay.
A lot of Saint films coming out recently. This
yes.
is not Saint Maud. The horror film Saint Francis premiered at South by last year and
screened
then
at Outfest last year
and
too.
Played at Bentonville. Yeah, we've definitely discussed the beauty of Saint Francis before. It is by Alex Thompson and Kelly O'Sullivan. Kelly wrote and starred in it, and she plays a woman in her early 30s. Who's in that sort of driftless, aimless place that we actually generally see a lot of dudes in movies. She gets a job as a nanny right about the time she discovers she is pregnant with her much younger boyfriend's happening. I don't want to say like seed. She's pregnant
baby?
With her. Well, I love to. The whole thing is it starts off, she gets an abortion as she's also going through the process of being a nanny and having to be with a kid a lot. So she's reconciling a lot of things.
Sure.
And it's really thoughtful and insightful in interesting ways, but also very funny. The kid is hilarious. It's the little six-year-old girl. And there's something about someone trying to like bond with a child who is not like a kid. Like she is not like, well, talk to me about your doll. She's like, is that a doll? Like, it's so anyway, I really enjoyed all of this. It's funnier than you might expect, but St. Francis, it is currently opening in L.A. and New York and then sort of spreading out through a variety of states over the next month, so I would keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, great character piece.
Yeah. Before we go, we like to read our 5-star reviews. If you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read on air. Except there are no new reviews this week.
Boo.
All I could say is something to say I want to say. Pray to Jay I get the same old, same old. Yeah, a little jive anger for you.
I am that gif from Game of Thrones with the woman ringing the bell and saying shame.
Shame, yeah.
I've never seen the show, so I don't know what the context of that was, but no, you know
this,
what I mean.
No, this is spot on. Works, yeah. It was about a bad review someone gave.
I thought, yeah.
Oh,
or lack thereof.
You guys, you remember that bad review that Cersei got? So, yes, we love reviews. We're shallow people. What can I say? Please get on Apple.
Tell us you love us.
That's all we want. Next week, we will be discussing Kelly Reichardt's First Cow. And I'm very excited for that. Mujan, thank you so much for being here today.
Such a good time.
Where can people find you online?
Sure. I'm bad at the social meds, but you know, I'm there. I'm at Mujan Z on Instagram, but Mission to Zix, I do their social media.
Right.
I'm at Mission to Zix at Instagram for that. And also I do have a Twitter as my character, Barjarian Jade, on Twitter, and that's the only tweeting I do.
Okay, yeah. That's fun. I'd probably tweet more if I could do it in character.
Yeah, but season 4 of Mission to Zix has just started, and I'll be on the next season of At Home with Amy Sedaris starting in April.
Ooh,
nice.
Congratulations. Those are exciting.
Thank you.
High five to you.
Thank you. Well, that was my face. Okay.
Again. The number for the Who Shot line is WSY-803-1664. A reminder, you can buy a Jumbotron on our show
by
going to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Who Shot You Pod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYouPodcast or send us an email at WhoShotYou@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.